Well, happy Thursday to you and yours, and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you would like that participation to include a phone call or a tweet or an email, here's how you do that. 414-1234 is our local number. If long distance, it's 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is email, or tweet us at WFSU Perspective. Well, without question, Tallahassee has in most ways, shapes, forms, and fashions moved well beyond those days of institutionalized segregation. But also, without question, there remains a lot of yawning racial divides in our community. Now, we recently, if you remember, had one of our continuing series of longest table events in our town to bring folks together who might not otherwise hang out much with each other. And there are many other programs to provide opportunities for interaction and ongoing discussion when it comes to that racial divide. But who would have thought that Shakespeare would have anything to say about this? Well, the Southern Shakespeare Company insists he does. And this morning on Perspectives, we'll find out more about the cooperative venture that the Shakespeare Company has launched in conjunction with the Village Square and John G. Riley House Museum. So let's meet our panel from the Southern Shakespeare Company, Lanny Thomas. Good to see you again, Lanny.
Great to be here, Tom. Thanks. Thanks for having us.
And Phil Croton joins us again. Hey, Phil.
Nice to see you, Tom. Thank you for having us.
And on the telephone, we have Chris Berry, who is now Assistant Professor of Theater at Florida A&M University. Thanks so much for joining us, Chris.
Not a problem.
All righty. Let's talk about this. Number one, why? What is the connection here between Shakespeare and ongoing racial disparity in a city like Tallahassee, Florida? Lanny, what's the deal?
I think the idea came from the fact that we are going to be doing Romeo and Juliet in next spring. And the idea of somehow adapting that story with a biracial couple, perhaps, kind of brought out the fact that there are warring factions in that play, and we have the Montagues and the Capulets, and it sort of kind of made more sense to talk about the fact that the South Side and the North Side don't talk to each other as much as they should. So that's sort of the way to bring up the conversation using Shakespeare, because we're using something patterned after Shakespeare, because that then allows us to step away from actually confronting the issue itself, because you can look at and see it in a different context. And somehow I think that allows us to talk more about it afterwards. Last year, the Visiting Artist Series brought Keith Hamilton Cobb here to do his American Moor. And the Village Square helped us to do talkback sessions after each performance. And that, I think, is what we're trying to do, is actually put something on that people can then have a talkback about the issue itself. So.
And that's in keeping, of course, with the Southern Shakespeare Company's long tradition of taking the Bard's work and fast-forwarding it into our time and investing it, even though the words will remain as written by the great playwright, that the time sequence and the costuming and some of the social conventions surrounding the piece are our time, not his time.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. And Phil, bring to us the reminder. Many of us may have not read Romeo and Juliet or even seen it since back in the high school days, but the warring factions that and he talked about, those families. That is a parallel to what we're seeing with race sometimes?
Absolutely. I think the amazing thing about Shakespeare, and what we in the education department are trying to do, of course, is make Shakespeare relevant to the children of today and realize he's not a dusty, dead author from 450 years ago, but in fact has wonderful stories and amazing concepts of how things are. As you mentioned, the Southern Shakespeare Company has done lots of conceptual versions of Shakespeare where we have taken the original words but put them in a different setting. Midsummer Night's Dream in the 70s and so on. But this concept was actually to devise our own piece on the framework of Romeo and Juliet. The story of Romeo and Juliet is two households divided, people that have grown up with hatred or division and stories from the past that has led them to be two very separate families that are not allowed to react with each other, to certainly not to have a romantic interest. And in the story, of course, he goes, Romeo goes to the party that's being held where he meets his Juliet. And the father actually then is aware he's there and says, actually, he's not a bad lad. You know, he's okay. But there's so much hatred between the rest of the families that it creates this division. And, of course, it's a tragedy, so virtually everyone dies at the end of the play. We're not necessarily going down that route. But what we are looking at is, in fact, if he'd communicated better, that tragedy might not have happened. And people tried their best will. Friar Lawrence tries to help them out by going underhand and keeping things secret and so on. It's just communicating and talking, and that's what we want to do. And we want the children of Tallahassee, our students and our college students, to realize that you do need to discuss these things. You can't sweep things under the carpet, which I think is a problem with race often, is that people don't talk about it and don't want to confront issues they may have themselves or their families had. I mean, I've got in-laws that have lived in this part of the world, in Port St. Joe, just down the road for many years, and they remember what segregation was like. They grew up with it, you know, and the theatre there, which fortunately now is hopefully going to be revived, has a separate entrance for people to go upstairs, and the two were kept apart, you know, and there were separate fountains and segregations in the schools, and that has gone. But there's still an underlying trend of, as Lanny mentioned, the South Side and the North Side are very economically diverse, as well as people still having racial issues they try to keep under. We want people to be open and talk about them so that we can get beyond them. The only way to move forward and to create a more harmonious society is by discussion, I think.
Yeah, just recalling that even the great Monticello Opera House, the balcony was reserved for African American folks, and right. And yet the seating was so compact. I can't imagine being on that little thin strip of seat up in that balcony, which must have been horrifically hot in the summer, particularly, any more than 15 minutes. Yeah. You know, your rear end would crease there. Chris Berry, from your perspective in the drama department over at Florida A&M University, what does all this say to you?
It says that the conversation needs to happen, and that we can't continue to think that the way we go about things will cause a change, because what we've been doing in a way is saying, well, if we don't acknowledge it, if we just say it isn't there, then it won't be there, when a lot of these behaviors, albeit subconscious, are learned behaviors from times long before. I'm 31 years old and I'm from New York, so I come from a different perspective, but similar perspective. But I think when I come down to a town like Tallahassee, and many, you know, most cities in America, although it's not, doesn't have the history of the South, they're still built like this. And I think it's the conversations that we feel as if we'll be losing something if we have them and if we come together to have them. And I often think, because there's so much emotion and pain intertwined into the history of this and injustice, that we'll never come to a consensus of how we move forward, because what I find is we often try to be right rather than get things right. And so that this is an opportunity for us to use art, which has an immense power to let us see our lives without having it be our names, that we can then move forward through that. And that being the impetus of the conversation, so we don't have to use my grandmother's history or my grandfather's history, but rather we can use what we just saw as a means to come together and discuss.
And the wonderful thing about Shakespeare is that everyone brings their own experiences, their own background, their own perceptions to their reading of the characters and the storyline. So when it comes to this restaging, Lanny, I'm thinking that people are going to look at this in a very, very different way, and that is going to jumpstart some great discussion.
I think it's important that what we're trying to do is hear from people in Tallahassee and build a story based on those that roughly parallels Romeo and Juliet. The connection to Romeo and Juliet is not as important as getting real people's stories. So I wanted to make sure that you understood and everyone understood that this was not going to be Romeo and Juliet. It really is kind of comes out of growing out of the stories that are here. So that makes it different from actually paralleling the script, the Romeo and Juliet script, unless we have, with a central character of a couple, I think that's probably going to stay. But all the rest of it has to do with whatever we hear back in this interview process. And that, I think that distinction
that's
is
right.
important.
It's a real new process for us, isn't it? We're devising the play, and it's not going to be Shakespeare's words. That'll be in a main stage production in spring. We'll be Romeo and Juliet. That's what's going to happen.
But two different things here we're talking
absolutely
about.
Right, but A Town Divided, which is this production which we want to take to high schools and to colleges, is going to be devised by our local authors. It'll be directed by Chris, and it'll be from the stories that we hear. So we've got the loose framework of a couple that have difficulties, and it can be any kind of, not necessarily just racial, it can be all kinds of divisions that we have in our society today and prejudices that people have. So any of the issues are those that the people of Tallahassee can bring to us, can tell us their stories, and we can then get a thread of a line going through and make our own. We're going to create over the next couple of months this storyline, get our actors in and start rehearsing it, and then take it on tour to our high schools and to our colleges. That's our plan. So it's for Southern Shakespeare, it's a completely new concept for us to actually use the writing skills we have. We've got people that are doing creative writing and so on, and we'll come together as authors, get the story and work on it, tweak it, and have Chris obviously involved in, and then start rehearsing it. So it's an entire community product, basically.
Yeah, but first you got to start with the story. So let's see, we're coming up rapidly on a break, and I promised you guys I wasn't going to say, well, tell me all about the world here in the next 10 seconds, guys. But we want to, on the other side of the break, talk about how people can make their stories known to this project, and also what's, if not really a spoiler alert, but any kind of input that you have gotten already that you might want to share as far as some of the stories from the community are concerned and how this plays into the whole project as well. In the meantime, we want to hear from you guys at 414-1234. That's our local number for Perspectives. 800-926-8809 is long distance, and perspectives@wfsu.org is the email. We shall be right back. Talking about a brand new project that we have cooking right here in Florida's capital city. This is a cooperative venture amongst the Southern Shakespeare Company, the Village Square, and the John G. Reilly House Museum to further push forward the conversation that this community is working on as far as race relations are concerned. And this is called A Town Divided, A Story of Shakespeare, Race, and Our City, involving those groups. And we have Lanny Thomas and Phil Croton from the Southern Shakespeare Company, as well as Chris Berry, who is now the assistant professor of theater over at Florida A&M University, on Perspectives this morning. And you are always invited to join us at 414-1234 to share your story. And speaking of stories about the racial divide in Tallahassee. What do we have so far, and what else are we looking for? Lanny, Bill, Chris, whoever.
Well, I know. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
I was encouraged to share my story because it's an interesting one, and it's something that I have experienced often in my life. So I'm a product of a biracial marriage. My mom and my dad. My dad is white. My mother is black. And I attended a historically black college and university for undergrad. And coming back to work at FAMU was something fantastic. But oftentimes, because of the way the exterior appearance, to most people, because I'm bald, I probably look just like a normal run-of-the-mill white guy. And my students are often intrigued, and there's often a distance that happens because of what they seem as a, like what they look at as could be a disconnect. And they often, on the first day of classes, they always want to ask me, hey, what's your background? But I can see that they're scared. And like the moment I tell them my background, there's like this big exhale in the room because it's the question everyone wanted to ask, but no one really wanted to ask because they don't want to fail the class the first day or offend anyone because subjects of race can get so touchy. And that I often find myself, it's something I've had to deal with. I've grown up very, very understanding of what I grew up in the pre-Obama. It wasn't really that cool to be of a biracial relationship. And I've often grown up having to understand my lineage. So I'm always comfortable in talking about it and creating, making sure that the room can exhale. And it's amazing because I come from a working class background, and a lot of my students do, not all, but some of them do. And I see in them a lot of what I see in myself, although the complexion may be different. So I love when that exhale happens so that we can all move forward. What's beautiful about it is that there's this tense honesty that happens the moment before. Because we all want to talk about it, but we're afraid. And I find that that's the thing that we deal with all the time with race relations in Tallahassee, in America, that there's that tense moment where we often, our brain goes, no, let's not talk about this right now. But then some student has the courage to do it, and the entire room exhales. And it allows us all to, like, move forward in a much more productive way rather than have that question hovering and being omnipresent of, well, what? Why is this guy here from New York? And no, this is why I'm here. I'm here because this is I wouldn't rather be anywhere else, you know, teaching than at a HBCU like FAMU.
That is intriguing. So your story is going to be one of those that will be part of this narrative here. And what others do we have? I think we have, what, a couple more?
We do. We have actually there's a woman who is helping us from Village Square. Her name is Jovita, and she's a wonderful person. And she is in a biracial relationship. Her husband is white. Her story will be part of it. And because of where she is in terms of age, it's different than the younger people who would be high schoolers, or if we're going to have a couple that is young, that are young people. We would also like to look at the older folks who have been around longer and have lived through the segregation periods, because I think that gives us a better perspective as to where, or even if the young couple, what did their parents think about their being in a biracial relationship? And I think what we'd like to be able to do is find people who are willing to talk to us about wanting the races to be separate. Because I think that adds to the conversation, fuel to the fire perhaps, but it adds to the conversation that we get a fuller perspective if we have both sides or all different sides that can talk about this kind of situation. I have another gentleman who is an older white man, and he said to me that when he first came to Tallahassee, he had no idea about black culture. And it is only through going to the Essential Theater and doing things at FAMU that he started to figure things out, that it wasn't the way he grew up. Those ideas that he grew up with were not really true. So it's kind of an interesting evolving thing that I hope we can capture in the script.
Because so much of it is racial, certainly, but there's also culture, there's also economics, there's all these other factors that play into this. So it is a very complex stew.
It is. And things like gathering the information, I've been very lucky to work closely with Devon Glover, who's Sonnet Man, who comes from New York and has been with us for the last 3 years. And he and I are talking about getting these interviews together and how we can do that physically, whether we can do it over the phone, whether we can meet people and so on. And for me to go to the South Side and sit down as a tall, balding Englishman, white as a white can be, isn't going to get the reactions that Devon can get. And Devon, and because that's part of this, the thing, the exhaling of the air, is because a person of colour might talk more readily, more freely to somebody who they can relate to and has been through those experiences. And Devon had an incident in a supermarket back in New York fairly recently where he was sort of rough-handled by a policeman because of his colour. There was no other reason particularly he could come to. And so these little stories that come through, and Devon hopefully, and we met a wonderful lady just recently called Emery, who's going to be working at Cobb Middle School in charge of the drama department, and she's got wonderful stories to tell as well. I mean, and we want her and Devon to help do those interviews. I want to try and get to interview as many people as I can be open about their feelings of race, and that's going to be the tricky part, I think. You know, I remember seeing Avenue Q for the first time a long time ago, and that wonderful thing, everyone's a little bit racist, and that's the awkward moment in the theatre when people go, I'm not, and it's getting people...
Some of my best friends are...
As soon as you hear that, I'm not racist, but... And then, there you go. So it's getting those interviews as well, I think, and that's really important to us. So as Lanny said, we want it to be truthful. We don't want to do a sanitised West Side Story version without the songs. You know, we don't want it to be the clichéd love affair that ends tragically because of people misunderstanding. We want the truth from Tallahassee, that when people see it, they can relate to the areas and the subject matter that they're hearing.
And everyone got along happily ever after.
And I would say it takes a tremendous amount of courage, and I think what we're imploring is that are looking to handle your truth with a tremendous amount of care.
Absolutely.
And we understand, and I understand in sharing my story, you never know the consequence of what happens when you speak, but I think the greatest consequence that can come is that we all understand that there are similarities between our differences in our way we perceive things, and that's the way we can come together rather than being content with hiding. That the courage it takes to be honest and the courage it takes to be real with ourselves about our truth and our honesty, that we can make a story that's compelling and that can last through the test of time and have an effect on the community rather than just it be another, touring show that happens.
Oh, to that end, I want to tell you that what we're going to do, especially at the high schools, and it may be at the colleges too, is have a survey and get reaction and also create a kind of email list so that we can contact and continue. Because, I was working on a grant. I was going, what is one show going to do for a high school? What we need to do is find somebody at this high school on the south side who can partner with someone in a high school on the north side and keep that conversation going. And that's the kind of if it's just one show, it's probably going to not mean much. But if we can somehow build the cross current between different parts of the city, I think then we start to break down those barriers. And that's one other thing I wanted to mention. Goodwood Museum and Gardens is also a partner with us. So I want to make sure that that's part of it, as will be Leon County Schools, because we're going into the high schools.
So. Oh, terrific. Okay, let me add that here, because that is, all partners are certainly worthy of praise on this particular thing. Do we need to develop, before we tell people how to make their stories known to this whole project here, do we need to develop a new language? Because Chris just mentioned this, that the prior to the exhale, how do we talk to each other in a way that is not overtly offensive, but at the same time is honest and in a spirit of sharing, and here's how I really feel inside, but I don't want to hurt your feelings.
Well, I find it interesting because I often find that people being hurt, if the intent is never to hurt, that if we understand how sensitive we can be with language, that it often is, I call them, a you problem. But I also think that we have to take responsibility and ownership that before we have a conversation that we find ourselves valuing culture outside of our own so that the conversation isn't just a learning experience, but we have done research prior to the conversation that we deem valuable. So we're not looking for the other person to validate their existence, but rather we're trying to see how humanity comes together. so I'm not depending on someone outside of my culture to inform me all about that. I'm doing research as much as I can, as honestly as I can, rather than depending on the other person. And I think that can create a language of informed, knowledgeable dialogue prior to the tense air, so that we can all come from a knowledgeable standpoint rather than a standpoint of, you know, stories, tales, and emotion, and that we combine the emotion with some sort of understanding of a culture outside of our own.
Okay, so moving away then, Chris, I think what I hear you saying is moving away from the problem with you people and towards the tell me about your story.
Absolutely. I was very lucky recently. I went to the Bethel AM Church here on Orange Avenue, and the Reverend Eric Little was having a seminar on truth and reconciliation. And it was fascinating because I, coming from London, and a very different sort of racial tensions there. There are, of course, around the world, but it's less segregated than it was here, I think. And to hear people there talking about it and accepting me and asking me about my background was very sort of therapeutic for me. And understanding more about, you know, the origins of the slavery and the difficulties that people have going through, and trying to shake off that fear, you know. It's so yeah, going to those sort of things, as Chris says, getting the research and doing these things is very important, I think. But we really need people's stories. That's the main thing we need to find. And we will, as Chris says, be very sensitive. We do it anonymously. We're still in the early stages of this process. We haven't decided whether we're doing multimedia production, whether we'll have videos and audio and so on. But we're very happy if people want to have their stories taped, or we'll tape it for us, or do a telephone conversation, or a physical interview, or through Village Square, perhaps at meetings, we can get the stories going. But we need to try and if good men do nothing, is the famous Burke story. If we need people to come forward and help us get this project out there, so that it becomes a really important part of Tallahassee and what's happening at the moment.
So how does that sharing take place? How do we do this?
Well, one way to do it would be to email to R&J, R-A-N-D-J, at southernshakes.org.
Okay, R-A-N-D-J at southernshakes.org. Okay.
Yep.
I write slowly. I'm sorry. And this can form, are you looking for a particular format here? Once upon a time, this happened to me, da-da-da-da, or just a straight narrative, or bullet points, or...
Stream of conscience, whatever it is. Anyway, we haven't got a sort of set, you know, how did this happen, and what, you know, what's your name? That, we just need details of real life and your feelings, because theatre has to be at the edge of emotions. And as Alani says, we would like, of course, to make it more exciting by having confrontation, because theatre thrives on, of course, that aspect.
Conflict.
Conflict, of course, is, yeah, exactly right. That's what Shakespeare wrote about. You know, the plague on both your houses, a guy realising that these guys was unnecessary for him to die for this cause, for just for the feud that's going on that really didn't need to exist anymore. And that's exactly where we are in Tallahassee.
Okay, and Chris Berry, walk us through the process then. What do you do once this, we hope, just abundance of stories comes pouring in and you see all this wonderful raw possibility for drama here?
Yeah, well, I guess that you compile all the information, and once you have a team, you know, we're going to have a team of writers, and that we have to figure out the who. And if we have two main characters, and figure out the who disbands from there. And then in this, you know, when you have a lot of information like this, you have to see where I want to hit three major points. You know, you want to hit a very clear beginning exposition, very clear climax, and very clear ending. And an ending doesn't mean a resolution, but ending just means at some point this thing has to end. and then from there, you find out how you can create the conflict, because without the conflict, our play will be, you know, infomercial. And then when we have to see what character has to change. Who is the character where the pivotal moment happens of change, that they are the one that sees or has the change happen to them? How does the conflict move plot forward? When it comes to theater and when it comes to art, I'm very language driven, and I want to see how the language moves the action forward, and that everything is serving what we're trying to get to at the end. And I guess once one of the first things we have to come to is, and when we have this compiling of raw, emotional, you know, some very probably very well put together information, what is the story that we can tell? Because I don't think we want to create something completely fictitious and throw away all these amazing accounts and figure out what story we can tell. And from there, we create the characters and how meaty and juicy. And we use the stories, I guess, as the framework. And then we fill in some of the finer details with some of the writing. And they are the guiding, you know, they're showing us where we need to go. And I think we have to trust in the stories, because I'm guaranteeing that there's probably going to be some level of similarities in some of the stories, so that we can really let the community guide us to what story needs to be told at this moment, rather than force what story we want to be told.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this is going to be a production that essentially the community is collaborating in the play itself.
Absolutely.
That's what we hope anyway. And this is something that we have come to, but it really is not that far away from what we have been trying to do since we started again, not back in the 90s, but since we started again. And that is because we do have an outreach program, which Phil is in charge of, and we do go into all sorts of communities. I don't know how many times he's been at Rickards High School or mm-hmm. Godby. I know that we've done a number of different things. We continue, especially for Title I schools. This is something we've been doing for a long time. So this kind of grows. When you started, you said, what does Shakespeare have to do with this? Well, our mission has always been to make that happen. And so this is sort of makes it there's the music. Uh-oh.
There's the music.
I better wrap up.
Well, why don't we just continue that thought on the other side of the break here, Lanny? Okay. And we'll do that. We are talking about the new initiative that brings together a bunch of forces in our community, including the Southern Shakespeare Company, along with the John G. Riley House Museum, Village Square, Goodwood Museum and Gardens, and Leon County Schools, combining the dramatic mechanisms of Shakespeare with a larger discussion of race in our community. And we'll be right back on Perspectives in just a moment. Back on Perspectives with our follow-up to The Longest Table and a lot of other race reconciliation efforts. If we can put this all in one big bundle here of activities that the community has been focused on many, many years to talk about what's happening amongst ourselves in all of our iterations. A Town Divided, A Story of Shakespeare, Race in Our City, a community theater project is what we're talking about with Lanny Thomas and Phil Croton and Chris Berry here on Perspectives. And your input as well at 414-1234. You have any thoughts? You might want to even advance part of a personal story that you might be thinking about sharing with these folks. And a reminder, you can always find Perspective online at WFSU.org. Just go to our new improved website, click on Radio, pull down the Programs menu, click Perspectives, usually within and by end of day of the airing of a program, we'll have it up there on the web so you can listen to it again and again and again. During the break, something just so intriguing. This divided community is coming together to create a play.
About a divided community.
About a divided community.
That's all we're asking, if the community can actually come together so that we can produce this piece of art. But it does need the town to be actually working and cooperating together. And then we can talk about how divisions, I think. But it's an intriguing juxtaposition.
Yeah. And Chris Berry, of course, that this is a major anniversary. This year is the 50th anniversary of the desegregation of Leon County Public Schools.
Wow.
Yep.
So it kind of comes at a, propitious time? I don't know. But and so it was not that far away. And old-time Tallahasseans will probably have a different take on their stories than younger generations who probably cannot imagine the institutional segregation we have. Now, yes, do we have schools in this town that are predominantly white or African American? You betcha we do, by geographic division, if nothing else, but still being told that this is the school you must attend because of the color of your skin still seems like a totally alien concept to a lot of folks, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned at the top of the program, my in-laws who lived through that, you know, still to them as young people, that was how life went on. You know, that and they didn't see, as we look back in horror, that people wouldn't be allowed to drink from the same water fountain, and people were treated as a different species, yet alone different. You know, we can't imagine that. I think, and children today growing up, and thank goodness we are a multiracial society now, but there's this feeling. I come from London, and I came to Tallahassee, and I love Tallahassee, and I'm thank you for having me here. It's been great. It's been a wonderful experience. But there is this feeling amongst the people, particularly on the north side, I think, that there isn't a race problem anymore. That we've had Martin Luther King, and then everything's fine. Now, and it's all wonderful, and everyone's got equal opportunity. No, they haven't. You know, there is still a problems to be discussed and talked about. And it's this sort of sweeping under the carpet and saying everything's great in Tallahassee for me. And if there are people struggling, that's their problem. They should get out. That's just not acceptable. We do need people to be treated as equals and to really get that across. And hopefully this play can just start the discussion, which is all we can hope for, I think. And as Lanny said, we need to make sure it's not just a piece of theatre that comes into the school and the kids say, that was very interesting. I did a thing on Anne and Emmett about Anne Frank and the treatment of the Jews in by the Nazis. And you have to, you can see it and say, oh, that's terrible. But what you have to make sure is that that can never happen again. And that's what theatre has to do, is to create the discussion and the thought in people's minds, what can we do to change the situation? Hopefully our town divided can do that for the children of Tallahassee.
Yeah, and even though we're talking about all this here, and you still... And Chris, let me throw this out to you. Is this very often still a two steps forward, one step back situation? We've seen what has occurred as far as an outpouring of sudden, hey, I can say whatever the heck I want. I don't have to be civil and nice and sensitive and politically correct, whatever the heck that means. In the past, especially a couple of years, there seems to be a resurgence of some of this nasty incivility that we kind of used to take almost for granted, and it's back again. Is that particularly disturbing, and can that be part of this project?
It is disturbing, and it's disturbing because people feel that it's appropriate, and that I never really understand when people think honesty and rude are synonymous, and then when people think that just because it comes to their mind that it needs, you know, needs to leave their mouth. And often I do find that we do take two steps forward and one step back, but the two steps forward, it's often with people that are willing to take the steps forward. And we often have to look in the mirror and recognize that we are often the creator of all of our problems and the solution for that matter. And that in order for us to make it three steps forward, that we have to own our baggage. And so that we're constantly in a situation where, in the time now, where people feel emboldened to be outwardly just spew hatred, I think is something that hopefully this is the one step back and not two steps forward for some. And that we have to realize that just because it may not be politically correct or it may be honest doesn't mean it has to permeate the way we teach and the way we pass down thoughts about culture. I often find that when we deal with situations like that, it's a product of fear, and we fear different, we fear change, we fear that we're under attack for some unknown reason in those cases. But I find that hopefully, you know, that being proactive rather than just being stagnant about these things. And I think as proactive as art can be, we should move forward to expose the uglies of this. That's why I think it's so necessary that we have honesty and conflict so that we see how toxic that one step back can be and how long that can affect people, and that you never know how these words and how these actions affect generations of people, because it has. You know, it's PTSD in that sense with many African Americans, and that can't be taken for granted. And to just say move on, that there has to be a healing process.
Yeah, and how everyone can help with that healing process. And while you were talking, Chris, I just kept flashing back on another great artist who wrote a song that encapsulates many of those thoughts. And I think the title was Man in the Mirror. How do we want this to play out then? I think we're teeing this up very nicely. If we can not just have a one-off with this project, that it becomes part of a sustaining cultural exchange. I love that idea where you have theater groups from the South Side visiting the North Side and vice versa, and getting these dialogues then that would follow those artistic presentations.
Well, actually, Village Square has just started a group meeting that meets once a month called Local Color. So the conversation will continue in that context, and hopefully some of the people that see the young people that see the show will join into that conversation also. So that's just another way to keep the discussion going, and hopefully that we do see some kind of growth where there is some understanding between the divergent things that we have that we're trying to get to.
I think the idea of having this email group afterwards of all the students that are interested in meeting other students and getting together, and that we run a thing called the Bardlings, which is our junior company at the moment, which is open to all members of the community. There is a fee, but there is scholarships available, and we'd like that to be more perhaps diverse as well than it is at the moment. But that's another way we can do that, and encourage young actors to try and come together. But it's getting the community together, really, and just forming friendships that have to be actors. They can be people that are inspired by the play to think, I need to know more about the cultures that are so just across the road. I mean, they're literally the other side of the railway tracks, you know, and it's getting them together and to talk. That's what it's all about.
Much has been made about this generational split that we also have, where of a certain age, it seems, or a certain generation, there is a greater ease of fluidity amongst different groups and races and backgrounds and everything else, where if you go to young people of a certain age, are they going to look at this and go, why is this even a thing?
Certainly that will be the case, I think, because we have multimedia and the great television that we see a lot more mixing. And I think that comes across, and what I think we don't have is that even though you're seeing those things on television, and I think the younger people are a little bit more open, but the ones that aren't are quiet. So we may see a lot of people that will say, oh yeah, it's not a problem at all, and not in the way that Phil was saying, where it was, I just don't want to talk about that.
Where it's repressed, yeah.
So I think that's true, but then how do we get that? If that is true, why is there still such a difference? Why is there still so much division? And that's what we're going to try and find out and put on stage.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
I was gonna chime in that I do think that although there may be some young people, high school and college students, that say they're, why is this happening? I can speak for a majority of some of my students. A lot of them might applaud and say, I'm glad this is happening because this happens, you know, I'm far too often a victim of bigotry, far too often a victim of discrimination. So although I think all of our 24 hours are the same, many of the realities are different within them. Although they may have been exposed, albeit the internet, via digital media, that to different cultures, when they step outside of their house, that's not the reality that they see and that they experience. So I do think that you're going to – I hope we are surprised with how honest some of the younger folks can be in their stories and their accounts about their experiences too.
Yeah, because they're not going to experience – I think you're absolutely right, Chris – this divide in the same way that either white or black folks who are in their 50s and 60s might interpret their history in this. And if we can get more intergenerational discussion going here. I think that might be
absolutely.
A good
part. I mean, Romeo and Juliet is a story of a young couple. I mean, very young in course, Shakespeare's days. A 12-year-old girl, 13-year-old girl is the equivalent of a 16, of course, now, that we might consider just starting on her sort of voyage. But it's a young person's story. We do need young person's points of view and the problems they have, perhaps with the police or whatever it may be. That's, as you say, this Disney-fied thing of multiracial harmony that you can switch on the TV and everything's wonderful. And as Chris says, you step out the door, it ain't necessarily so, you know. And we do need to get people who've had those experiences. Please let us know. It'll be anonymous, or you know, we can try and keep, we'll take great care of your stories. They're very important to us, and the spoken word is what we're all here for, really.
And we can never forget that here in Tallahassee, Florida, this was one of the pivotal places when it came to the historic civil rights movement. We look at Selma and Montgomery and all of those places, but here in Tallahassee, this was ground zero for so much earth-shattering change that occurred back in the 60s. And maybe some of that can be leveraged in here. We have some of those great pioneers who are still alive and living in our city, and I hope maybe some of their tales can be incorporated into this project.
That would be great. I think we also need to have an older generation, because the conflict in Romeo and Juliet, we don't know from the script why they're fighting as they are, but it's been entrenched and could have been for generations. And I think that's important too, that the generations, that we get an older perspective, because they did grow up with segregation. You know, we talked a little bit about the Monticello Opera House and how the upstairs was reserved for African Americans. And it's just that whole concept, I think we have to have some reason why this whole thing is so entrenched, has been so entrenched. And so,
yeah, beyond, it's always been that way.
That's right.
Well, Chris, what would you like to see? Let's fast forward here about 5-10 years, if we can go out that far. And let's just say that this initial sharing of stories from the community and synthesizing this wonderful, not just one play, but a series of dramatic outreaches throughout the community. What would you like to see?
I would love to look at Tallahassee as the epicenter of generative art. That it can be a place where the community is, and the art is reflective of the community rather than it's just a place where you can see shows as a means of entertainment and lean back. That everyone is an active participant in change and in art and in the social structure and political structure of Tallahassee, so that you look back at it and you go, wow, this is a community that came together to make art, to make change, and to analyze differences rather than be content with things as the way they were, you know, not to be a progressive artist, generative hub where we use our truths to make something dynamic.
And the city has been looking for a way to rebrand itself. I wonder if we're looking at a potential here for something. Talk about outside the box.
Wouldn't that be nice? Yes. I think also that COCA does a lot of that, and we are also working with them in terms of getting out and getting art to, as you said, Chris, just to make some dynamic art that's based in Tallahassee here. And I think that's part of what COCA is doing too. So,
yeah, we've been having discussions with COCA about various other things as well. There are 13 little small community theatre groups in Tallahassee, and they've just sprung up over the last few years as a burgeoning and growing theatre community here. And to see that grow in the next few years will be wonderful as well. And as you say, COCA are definitely trying to encourage us and help us in that regard.
Yeah, and not just in the affluent northeast part of town, but throughout, and to have this interchange, this cultural, it sounds like, boy, you're right, the railroad tracks still divide this city in so many profound and significant ways, that everything south is one thing, everything north is something else. And I don't think CSX realizes how that is playing
on
here.
Railroad squares straddles both of them, and Railroad Square, I think, is the center for us, for an arts community that's growing, I think, and that area is, and we perform, of course, in Cascades Park, but all around that area there's a growing feeling, I think, of this is where we can get things together. The longest table I think the prior to previous one was actually set along Railroad Square, you know, and that's
under the Over, as it's called, which I think is one of the most beautifully descriptive place names in town.
Absolutely wonderful, isn't it? Yeah. So that's what we need to do here, bring them together.
Folks, again, please, Lanny, give us the address by which people can make their stories known to you guys to be part of this community project.
If you want to email us, it's RANDJ, so it's RNJ, at southernshakes.org.
Lanny Thomas, Phil Croton, and, of course, Chris Berry over Florida A&M University. Thank you all for being on Perspectives. Good luck with the project, and we'll be following it through.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Lydell and Taylor today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Be sure to join us next week. More expert opinion, plus your calls and emails right here on Perspectives.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.